Michael Gay is Vice President of Engineering at Cumulus Media, but he's really an expert planner. Now, his most recent studio project, he oversaw the building of 22 new studios in Chicago. Pretty amazing with everything documented and organized. They built them really quickly. Chris Tobin is here, too, with his perspective and an update from the CCBE conference in Canada. This Week in Radio Tech is brought to you by Axia LiveWire Plus. LiveWire Plus includes fully compliant AES-67 audio over IP built in. LiveWire Convenience Plus, worldwide connectivity. By Direct Current Broadcast e-newsletter. Get Direct Current in your inbox every Thursday, with technical pointers putting you and your facility at an advantage. And by Lavo and the Crystal Clear Virtual Radio Console. Crystal Clear is the console with a multi-touch touchscreen interface. Hey, welcome into This Week in Radio Tech. I'm Kirk Harnack, your host. Delighted to be here. Yeah, if you watch the live stream, you know we had some technical difficulties. And, of course, it was on my end. It's just so frustrating when you have to reboot stuff over and over and over again. This is a show where we talk about radio technology, from the microphone, like this one, to the light bulb at the top of the tower. And we got a great show today. Chris Tobin is here from Canada. Are you in Toronto?
I am in Toronto, yes. I'm at the CCBE, the Central Canada Broadcast Engineering Conference, and actually in the hotel room at the moment. Today was a very harrowing day. It took me 5 hours to get here from New York.
What?
It's usually an hour and 10-minute flight. Well,
what?
Air Canada apparently had a problem with computers. Air Canada in Newark had problems with their computers, and they had to do everything manually. And when I say manually, I don't have it handy, do I? No. My boarding pass is a handwritten piece of paper on the Air Canada ticket. I kid you not. And then after they realized they won't get the computers going to be coming up, they had to call everybody by name. So you had to sit and wait for your name to be called. Then you'd come up to the gate, show your passport, and enter the plane. And even if you did check in online.
Yeah.
What's that?
Go ahead. No, I said, did they write your receipt on NCR paper?
Well, you know, the best part is you look behind them and they still have an Oki Data dot matrix printer that they use to print out the paperwork.
Sure.
Very annoying. Then they call you up and say, oh, did you check in online? I said, yes. Okay, can you show me that? What's the point? I'm here. I'm past security. Okay. They look at it. All right. Can you have your passport? Okay. You can now proceed. Get on the plane. Wait another hour. Then they start calling out names. And they call my name. And I was like, this feels like a scene out of a movie now. It's like, they come up to me, are you Tobin? I said, yes. You have a passport? Yes. May I see it? Sure. Is there anything wrong? No. Are you in seat 31 Alpha? I said, yes. Okay. Thank you. They walk away. I'm like, what the? And the person who did this to me was the same person who checked me in at the gate.
Oh, gee. Oh, man.
I'm like, wow. This is like Rod Serling's best. I mean, this is unbelievable. And then we took off at around 12:45, roughly. The flight was scheduled for 10:05 departure. It was about close to 1 o'clock, sorry. Got here around just before 2, or too little after 2 o'clock, and then they failed to announce which baggage carousel we were going to be using. So we sat there for 40 minutes, only to hear an announcement. Oh, we're sorry. There's been a mix-up. You're at baggage claim 9. So you can imagine 200 people scrambling to get to baggage claim 9 from number 12.
Yeah.
It was just unbelievable. So, yeah. At least the car rental went okay.
You know, actually, this would be a good subject to talk about sometime, is these large computer systems and how, you know, Southwest Airlines had a problem some weeks ago. They were really upfront about it. I really commend them for explaining the way through it and you know, and giving lots of video updates on Facebook and other places. Not trying to hide, you know, not trying to blame it on somebody else, and they really own the problem. But it was still a problem, and it caused a lot of people a lot of trouble. You'd think that we can get into a world where even big, really huge computer systems wouldn't have points of failure that would take everything down. So actually, our guest may be able to address a little bit of that, because he's in charge of some pretty big iron. So we'll get to that in a second. Oh, Chris, yesterday I flew home from Amsterdam from the IBC convention. And I got to the airport and showed my passport and stuff. The lady said, oh, there's a problem. The United States passport worldwide system is down. So go over there. Uh-oh. Because I was already kind of late to the airport. We had two traffic accidents. We didn't have them. But our Uber guy, you know, we we had to wait on two traffic accidents. And then somehow, I mean, I thought for sure, I'm no way I'm going to make this flight. No possible way. And the line was really long for the special area for all the U.S. passports. And then all of a sudden, just in time to go run to the gate, it started moving. Bam, 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 bam. And moving so well that I had a lot of heavy, heavy luggage, cameras, tripods, all the stuff that I use to produce videos over there. And they just put it on the plane. I said, isn't there a charge? Lady said, no, go to the gate. How about that?
It's annoying. But large computer systems, they, you know, I'm just concerned these days that there are less and less people competent to maintain them. That's why we're running into these problems.
Could be. So let's check in with our guest.
That's my guess. What?
Oh, I guess we've got a long, we have a long delay. I'll let you finish talking.
No, I'm good. I'm good. I'm good. Sorry.
All right. So Michael Gay is our guest. Let's bring Michael on in here. Maybe our delay will be a little shorter. Hey, Michael, how are you? Glad to have you on the show.
Doing good, Kirk. Thanks a lot. Glad to be here. Love talking about stuff. So what do you want to talk about today?
we're gonna get to all of our topics in just a minute. We've got a commercial to run through, but I want to introduce you. Michael Gay is the Vice President for Engineering at Cumulus Media, and I got to meet Mike a few years ago when they were putting a large facility together, and we've maintained a friendship, got to see each other now and then. And every time, Michael, I hear about your exploits, you know, a project you've got planned, and what's always cool is to understand the way you're putting technology to use, and that's going to be mostly the subject of today's show. So I'm looking forward to what you have to say about building studios and incorporating the latest tech.
I'll bore you to tears, I'm sure.
I doubt it. I highly doubt it. All right, our show is brought to you in part by the folks at Axia, and they have the folks at Axia have LiveWire, and they've made that now LiveWire Plus, and the Plus on LiveWire Plus simply means they've added AES-67, fully compliant AES-67, and I've got a video here. I hope it's ready to go. Marty Sachs is here to tell you about AES-67 and the latest control protocol, AES-70.
So Yogi Berra had it wrong. He said, the future ain't what it used to be, because on the topic of audio over IP, the future is very bright. AOIP facilities cost less, they're faster to build, easier to build, and they really simplify workflows. So AES-67, as a standard, was ratified in 2013. At that point in time, a standard was created to be able to interoperate or to be able to share audio between facilities. And that's what AES-67 is all about. Before AES-67, using LiveWire, our clients were able to interchange audio, control, and other program-associated data, as well as advertising information, very easily. So in a LiveWire facility, it's very easy for our customers to be able to find sources, to be able to listen to them, be able to feed them, and also to be able to have GPIO and advertising information as a part of the network. LiveWire customers were able to interchange audio and advertising information, control data, and also program-associated data from day one of installing an Axia system. But not every manufacturer had that capability. So what AES-67 does is allows gear from our company, for instance, the TELUS Alliance, to share audio information with gear from other manufacturers. And not only that, but it actually gets better because AES-70 has been just ratified. And AES-70 allows, for the first time ever, a standard to exist to exchange GPIO. So we all know broadcasters need closures. Broadcasters need to start and stop equipment. And that's what AES-70 allows for the first time, to have an AES standard that defines how that's done. There'll be some time before that is available in gear. The standard is literally, you know, at the time of this taping, very new, but it's coming. And so that makes AES-67 and AOIP an even more valuable resource for broadcasters. So today, for the first time, you're able to build a broadcast facility from microphone all the way to the transmission processor in fully AOIP. And that's the first time that we've been able to do that, literally from microphone to the final processor. Even speakers now are equipped with audio over IP connections. So being at the front end, we've worked with partners, we've worked with customers, and we've also worked with competitors. So we have a really good view of what's coming. Here are a few things that we see in AOIP's future. More adoption across a number of different markets. It's not just broadcast now that is interested in AOIP. And we've even seen a manufacturer that's not well-known in broadcasting, Audinate, with their Dante standard, now adopt AES-67. We think more choices for broadcasters are better. Through organizations like the Media Networking Alliance and the Alliance for IP Media Solutions, forward-looking broadcast manufacturers are helping to speed the adoption. So Telos is involved in both organizations to help move our industry forward. We're really excited about this. So people who said no to us in the early days when we first started selling AOIP now say yes. They're leaving their TDM and other proprietary solutions and adopting AOIP. The vast majority of people that we talk to every day tell us that they will not buy solutions that are not AOIP based. Clients tell us there's a real difference between AOIP throughout the network and AOIP just at the edges. AOIP is here to stay, and we're excited about it.
You're watching and listening to This Week in Radio Tech. I'm Kirk Harnack, your host, along with Chris Tobin, who is in Canada, in Toronto, for the CCBE. And then also Michael Gay, our guest, is with us from Atlanta, from Cumulus. Michael, welcome in again, and let's start talking technology. I believe you've probably been a user of audio over IP for a while now. Is that a technology that that you think has legs for you guys?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, looking at the video and having, you know, Marty talk about it, a lot of things he's talked about being possible, we are trying to work toward as we speak. We've done a bunch of different facilities through the design and try to make as much audio over IP as possible. Our goal is to try to build these facilities quickly, efficiently, not spend a whole lot of, you know, money if we don't have to, but really just, you know, have them go together fast, but have a very high quality product at the end. And so I've kind of coined this phrase of the way that I've been designing some of these facilities for us recently, a data center that plays music. Because when you're doing the facility planning for these facilities, you're really not building a radio station or a radio market. You really are building a data center that, you know, its core infrastructure is IP. Yeah, you have studios, you have microphones, but, you know, there's, you know, 5 or 10 feet of the signal, and then all of a sudden it's in the IP realm, and your studios really are just a node off of that central core that you've built. So that's kind of the philosophy that I've been taking in a lot of facility design, just eliminating audio, whether it's AES-3 audio or whether it's analog audio, trying to keep those audio paths as short as possible, typically maybe from the microphone to the mic processor, from a CD player to an AOIP device, but nothing leaves the studio that is audio. I've just finished a project where we did 22 studios, and there is no audio signal from any of the broadcast studios back to the central core that is AES-3 standard audio or analog audio. It is all IP. And because of that, all the wiring from those studios is nothing more than Cat 6. 24 Cat 6s to each studio to handle main and redundant audio IP. And then you still have a smattering of computers and systems and studios and whatnot. But as far as the audio path, really, 2 Cat 6s is about it.
you're singing my tune here and saying things that... back early on in the early days of AOIP, I was pointing out that you can build a radio facility and there will be no audio cable longer than probably 6 feet long. You know, a cable going to a microphone or maybe 12-foot long cables going to speakers. But now we have speakers that are AOIP that are AES-67 speakers. I just played with some last week from Genelec. So it's Neumann has an AES-67 microphone now. Now, granted, the part that's AES-67 is a rack mount box. It's a power supply and other stuff for the microphone. But it's AES-67. So kind of looks like that's really the world we're going to.
Yeah, we're getting closer. I think probably right now there's still some issues getting everything configured, getting the different manufacturers to talk to each other properly. I think if we can get to a point where AES-67 is as easy to plug and play as AES-3, then you're going to see it greatly proliferate. One of the things that I know engineers like is they like easy. They want it to be, you know, plug and play. They don't want to have to, you know, figure it out. They just want to, you know, make it happen and go. You look at the types of technologies out there. I saw this cartoon a while back, and it was a line chart, and you had this axis, and in the middle of the axis, it was tools that, you know, are good tools, tools that are very useful tools, and tools that are not useful. And the way it determined that is the tools that were useful were tools with a manual. Tools that were very useful were tools that did not need a manual. And the tools that were not useful at all were the ones that came with a manual that said, that started out, how to read this manual.
Okay. Oh, gee.
So the simpler we can make things for the installer, for the engineer, for the operators, everybody likes simple. Look, everybody knows about iPhones and Android devices. I've always said one of the reasons those devices have taken off is because it puts a lot of very powerful technology in the hands of people, but they're very easy to use. My kid can use it. My third grader knows how to use it. My sixth grader knows how to use it. So you've got to get the stuff to where it's simple. And I think when we get AES-67 to the point where the average user can install it without having to think, without having to program Cisco, without having to have a lot of other technical expertise other than plugging and going, I think that's when you're going to see an explosion, just like we did with AES-3.
You're talking some language here that I think Chris Tobin has an opinion on. He's a believer in IP audio, but also in making it secure and simple enough to put together so it's not scary. Chris, what are your thoughts at this point?
I would agree. I mean, it's pretty straight. Oh, wow. What happened? I think I bumped my camera. Sorry. The best part of laying out, like we've said in the past, with the IP stuff, plan it, organize it, and stick to the organized layout. And as far as securing it, if you're internal, you have two ways you could secure it. If you want to secure it from, you know, nefarious activity, then you could do IPsec protocols. Or you just create your own island of a LAN, and if you're going to cross over the bridge, if you will, make sure the router you're using is a layer 2 switch with it, and you just use the IPsec protocols to keep everything out except for what needs to come through. I mean, that's, in essence, that's the best way, one of the best ways. So I would totally agree.
Michael, you mentioned this idea that what you're really building is data centers that play music. And you also added, well, and of course they still have microphones and speakers. When you first told me data centers that play music, I'm thinking, oh, man, that sounds like big automation in the cloud. And that's where we may, you know, lose some local radio. But that's not really what you meant. I shouldn't take it that way. A data center that moves music and moves voice and moves all this stuff around. And you're right. It's getting to be where the engineering is, you know, I don't know, 60, 70, 80, 90% IP, right?
Yeah, I mean, the most powerful tool an engineer has in his toolbox in an AOIP environment or a new modern plant in general is his computer keyboard and mouse rather than the wire cutters and punch tool. It's just it's a complete paradigm shift. And in a facility I just did, each studio had no more than 2 punch blocks, and none of those had any audio on them. They were really just for breaking out some GPIO to light up some lights in the facility, in the studio. Just, it was easier that way. Everything else was all Cat5 and RJ45 plug and play.
So when you're thinking about Well, let me back up a little bit. As broadcast engineers, we're all used to, you know, wire, and we all know a lot of the rules about handling analog audio and AES audio. Boy, in the facility sizes that you've been working with, Michael, what IT skills have been necessary? Does just one guy need to really have those skills and tell others what to do, or does everybody need to be really up to speed? How much of this depends on, you know, having different certifications, or is it just a lot of fairly common sense stuff? Can you kind of characterize the skill set that you'd be looking for to build a facility like you've been doing?
Probably the most challenging skill set is during that initial setup and configuration. And that skill set is knowing how to configure a switch to handle all of the QoSing and all of the packet requirements that that an AOIP environment requires, making sure that that you've got a nice low latency system, no jitter, that the packets can get through very quickly in order and make it there on time. But once that switch is configured and set up, really the only thing after that would be any troubleshooting skills on that switch. You may need to be able to get in and do packet traces if you have any jittery audio that might happen. But usually once it's set up, they're stable. As far as the end equipment itself, the only skill you need to really know is how to set an IP address and how to plug in a Cat6 cable.
You know, your advice is what I have found as well. When I'm well, 2 years ago, I built some more radio studios at my places in Mississippi, and replaced a switch here just recently. And honestly, I didn't do the switch setup myself. I called upon support from the company that provided that. It was Axia. I called upon them, and they were able. You know, I made sure I could have them remote in. It was easy for them to do remote in and configure the switch because I didn't want to make a mistake. And when you buy an off-the-shelf switch from Cisco, it's got to be configured. And, of course, we talked about which ports were going to be doing what. We had some gigabit ports that were definitely going to be trunk ports, and then the rest were access ports. But I didn't want to make a mistake in that, so I had them do it. The support department at Axia played the part of my IT department. And so I just had to make sure I didn't have conflicting IP addresses and conflicting channel numbers. Really basic stuff that, hey, if you're setting up a desktop computer, you've just about got all that information and skill anyway. Would you say the same?
Yeah, I would say that all the AOIP manufacturers I've had to deal with have offered that because, you know, they want it to work. It's very important for them to have a successful install as much as it is for the engineer or the local radio group. So most of the companies that are dealing with AOIP have that offering. And yeah, we've taken advantage of that. We've got some good guys in our company who have also acquired those skills. So, you know, we have to rely on it less and less. Look, it's a learning curve. You can equate it to transmitters. The very first time I worked on a transmitter, I had absolutely no idea what I was doing. It was this old 2.5 kilowatt, Harris transmitter, and it was off the air, and I had no clue what to do. You do it by learning. You get to a point where, you know, eventually I've rebuilt tube cavities. It takes time, just like any other technology. The key is not to fear it, but the key is to be open and educate yourself and try to find out, you know, what makes this stuff tick, what makes it so special. And as far as the switch configuration, there's the nice thing about AOIP is there's, you know, if you go to configure a TDM router for broadcast, you've got to find someone who has experience with that router. If you go to configure, let's say, a Cisco switch, I can find a million guys. I could probably throw a rock outside my window and hit someone who is Cisco certified, because that industry is so much larger than ours, and there's such a broad base of knowledge that you can draw on that you can get access to it quickly and cheaply. And that's another advantage of AOIP in general.
That's a great point. I'd like for Chris to comment on this, because Chris, you know, if I'm out if I as an engineer don't have a Cisco certification or some requisite skills, it seems to me that, boy, you find somebody who's Cisco certified or otherwise a good IT person, and you introduce them to the manufacturer of the audio over IP system that you're dealing with, because they do have some specific information that even a Cisco certified person may not, latch onto right away. You introduce them to each other, and you can be golden at that point. What are your thoughts along those lines? Or am I missing something?
No, wow, look at that. Sun moves on the window here. Hang on. Let me fix that. No, you're spot on with that. I mean, I'm not Cisco certified, and I do a lot of work on Cisco switches, but nothing that's probably mission critical. I do call in folks who do it for a living and enjoy it. As Mike points out, don't be afraid. I've always said there's plenty of resources available to find what you need, and if you plan it out correctly and don't wait until the 11th hour, you should be fine. And you can tap the resources of your IT department if you have one in the company or the group. If not, there's always somebody locally who might be interested, who's talented and certified in Cisco, that we'd be more than happy to work with you for a small fee, which is worth doing. And that's the way to go. I wouldn't panic. I think you're right on. To Mike's point.
Michael, you've got a lab there at your office, and I believe you spend a fair amount of time playing with different manufacturers' equipment. You've borrowed some of ours, you've borrowed some of other manufacturers, and you play with this stuff, and you find out how to really make it walk and talk together. So I get the feeling you're very self-educated in a lot of these techniques, yeah?
Well, that's the only way to do it. It's not like you can go to school, and while most manufacturers offer training, online videos, I've always found that sometimes the best way to deal with this stuff is just to get your hands on it, get your hands dirty, and see what makes it tick, and put it together, configure it, make it work, and figure out how it's going to interact with other systems that you might have in the plant. I think everyone should be encouraged to do that. Most manufacturers have some sort of a demo program through dealers, so most people can go to their local dealer and get demos of equipment and get it for 30 days and try it out and see what's really going on. I think a lot of people are afraid to do that because they might like it and then they want to keep it. Then they have to figure out how to pay for it. Usually the catch.
We're going to go to break here pretty soon. We got one more question before we break but it just went right out of my head. So most of these AOIP systems, I have always recommended, and probably other AOIP manufacturers have too, that this ought to be a closed system. Okay, if you're going to have access to it, probably have a PC with two network cards so you can access from the outside and then browse into that AOIP system. But things can get a little complicated if you really do want to meld two systems together, where you've got an AOIP network which has some very specific clock requirements and IGMP requirements and so forth, and you want that to talk with the business network, which doesn't have these and may have much less sophisticated switches or Wi-Fi access point, that kind of thing. What can you recommend, Michael, about mixing AOIP with the business network?
I usually recommend not to. Even machines in studios that are considered production machines, I typically do not put them on the AOIP network. I give them some sort of a separate sound device and run them into a AOIP device separately. And that's because that computer browses the internet. Production guys get content from the internet. Any machine that touches the internet is a security risk. And so I don't want any machine that touches the internet to be on the AOIP network. Automation systems typically are closed systems themselves. But yeah, Even then, the automation network we keep separate from the AOIP network, and we used dual homed machines. It's machines with dual Ethernet. I think it's a safe practice. Now, can you run AOIP over with a regular business network? Yeah, with proper VLANing and proper QoSing, it's possible, but it makes troubleshooting much more difficult if you do have an issue. It's just a lot easier to keep a separate closed system. That way, there's no outside, potential outside factors when you're trying to diagnose a problem. You don't have to worry about, is it somebody who browsed the internet and their machine is spewing multicast garbage? So you just eliminate that, and that way you can get to the problem a lot faster. And it really doesn't cost that much more. You're not really saving that much. Switches are cheap these days.
Gotcha. Yeah, I remember one project where a large state, statewide public broadcaster wanted to have 200 workstations out in the offices to be on the AOIP network, and that was a new thing for us. And they ended up hiring a couple of really, really top-level Cisco people to come in and configure two big Cisco switches to talk to each other, pass the right things, don't pass the wrong things, and it all worked. So the whole studio environment, you know, they're on the AOIP system, but the workstations out in the rest of the facility, they had access to Axia audio, to the AOIP audio, without much chance of causing a problem. But They paid to get that done, and I'm glad they did.
It's doable, anyway. But I'm a big believer in the KISS principle. I believe that the simpler you can keep the system, that, you know, if and when you do have a problem, the easier it is to diagnose and get to the root cause of an issue.
Yeah. All right. Hey, in the next part of our show, we're going to talk about some studio locations that Michael's been involved in. And some of the technology that's gone on there. Also, we'll have a video of a very famous disc jockey being just overjoyed with his new studio. So that's all coming up. Right now, a word from the folks at the Telus Alliance and Direct Current.
Not much in the paper today, is there?
Not much. Seems tough to stay informed, you know?
Like we're missing out on stuff, important stuff.
Yeah, feels like week-old news, yesterday's stories. Half the tech stuff in here seems out of date by the time I see it.
What Kirk doesn't know is I'm way ahead of everyone else around here. Every Thursday, I get this newsletter in my email. It's Direct Current. The folks at the Telos Alliance publish this.
What Joe doesn't know is I keep one step ahead of the radio guys in this market. Every Thursday, I get Direct Current from the folks at the Telos Alliance. It's a free newsletter about radio engineering, audio, streaming, studios, everything.
Thursday afternoons, we have our department head meeting. I look like a genius thanks to the knowledge, updates, and advice in Direct Current. Sometimes I wonder if I should tell Kirk about Direct Current. Might help him out.
I wonder if I should let Joe in on my secret. He could use a little help sometimes.
Get Direct Current in your inbox every Thursday. Read profiles of engineers and newsmakers in the broadcast community. Get technical pointers putting you and your facility at an advantage. Important industry news and views. Plus, you'll be up to date on Telos Omnia, Axia, and ZipStream products. It's all here in the Direct Current newsletter. Subscribe online at telosalliance.com/directcurrent. That's telosalliance.com/directcurrent.
It's This Week in Radio Tech, episode 319. Hey, it's Kirk Harnack along here with Chris Tobin in Canada. He's getting ready for the CCBE. Maybe Chris can tell us about that. Also, Michael Gay, Vice President of Engineering at Cumulus, is with us. And Mike has been involved with planning and executing several huge new studio builds, rebuilds, and moves and such. Chris, give us just a minute. Tell us about what you're doing in Canada, if you don't mind.
Oh, not a problem at all. I'm up here at the CCB in Toronto. It's actually in Kingsbridge Conference Center and Institute here in King City, Ontario. And it used to be in Barrie, Ontario. This is the first year they've moved it in a long time, so it's actually a nice place. Just outside my window is a nice pond with ducks and a large water fountain coming out of the center. It's a very nice view. And the weather's really good, too. It's about 62 degrees Fahrenheit. It's very comfortable. So here at the engineering conference, a lot of things go on. The best part of this conference, I have to always remind people, and Wally and a few others who watch this program know exactly what I'm talking about, is the hospitality suites in the evening. So you have papers during the day, and then in the evening we do hospitality suites with various vendors that come up from both the States and here in Canada and in Europe. So it's a lot of fun. And the papers this weekend are with – for TV, the ATSC3, I think, is what we're going to talk about. I've been asked to talk about some stuff on IP, audio, and STLs, and outside broadcasts, and how to generate revenue with the new technology. And I'm offering up some ideas and using Ubiquiti devices to make it happen as well. So it's going to be fun. And that's just a real quickie, and there's a few other things. But if you go to ccbe.ca on the website, you can find out about more about what they're doing, and it's a lot of fun. But it's It's all about the networking and having fun talking to folks that you in person rather than just on the phone.
You're right about those hospitality suites. A lot of fun and really, really good information is shared. You know, a few adult beverages are shared too, but my goodness, it's a great place to really shake hands and get to know the people who are behind the equipment that you're working with. And I think you can get some unfiltered advice there in those hospitality suites.
Absolutely. And I can say last year, was it or 2 years ago, Stu from Arctic Palm, you know, the software
guys?
Yeah.
I just saw him last week, yeah.
I just bumped into him at the lobby about an hour ago.
Yeah.
But he and I were talking about something 2 years ago, and I forget what it had something to do with the software and the way how they went about making it work and what they realized talking to customers. And it was the kind of conversation you would definitely not have on the phone. It was just one of these things where he's like, yeah, well, you know, we did this, and it required talking to certain, you know, developers, and it was amazing what we discovered you can't do, but you can, and the cost involved. It was. That's the kind of conversations I miss when I get out to NAB, because sometimes no one's willing to say anything or do anything, and you're running around. But that's what these conferences are about, whether it be an SBE regional conference or the CCBE or WABE, which is the Western Association, I believe, of Broadcast Engineers on the west side of the Gulf Canada. So you got WABE, CCBE up here in the north, and then the SBEs in the States and NAB as well, and the radio show next week. So take advantage of the opportunity to talk to vendors, and you know, you take them aside and say, hey, listen, you know, person to person, what's the deal with this, and why did you guys choose this method? Because then you learn something. You may find out why Nortel Transmitter uses a certain type of connector on the back or inside, or maybe Gates Air in their transmitters do a certain thing, because it may annoy you, but when you find out why they do it, you appreciate what went into it and go, okay, I give it to you. And that's the best part. And also for the beverages, for those who watch, I know there's a few folks up in Newfoundland, or known as Newfies, tomorrow night will be Screech. A very powerful drink. Good stuff.
Okay. Well, I won't be there. So have a Screech for me.
Well, the guys from Davicon, I won't say his name because I don't want to get him up in trouble anyway, but the guys at Davicon, we get together every year, and it's a lot of fun. That's all I'm going to say. Okay.
All right. Is there a golf course there? Because there was at the place they used to meet.
I believe there is. I didn't get a chance to look at all the details. There are tennis courts. I passed them in the parking lot. I didn't realize that. The place is huge. I haven't had a chance to search it out because I got here late. But, yeah, there should be the golf outing tomorrow, Saturday, the usual get-together.
Cool. Well, enjoy yourself, and I hope I get to go back there sometime. Michael Gay is with us, along with Chris Tobin. And, Michael, let's jump right back into some, you know, facility planning. You had a big project, I believe, in the Chicagoland area. Maybe tell us what you want to, what you can, about your planning procedure, difficulties in doing that. I'm looking for a story here. Tell me a story. suck me into the, you know, from an engineering point of view, into the drama of planning a facility in a big city and then executing that plan, and then we'll watch the terrific video that you recommended.
Well, the key is to avoid the drama. That's the hard part. That's the challenge in any of these projects, and it starts, you know, it begins at the beginning. I don't know how best to say that. You have to figure out what you have and what you need. And in this particular instance, we had four stations that were in two locations, and we had to combine them both and put them into a new location. There's challenges involved not only in, you know, taking two different sites with two different ways of doing things and putting them together, but just the overall facility design. And you know, I get involved in those. It's one of my primary roles is to get involved in projects and facility design. And you know, the primary skill set needed there is to be able to take a very large project with multiple moving pieces and break it down into manageable chunks. And it really goes back to documentation, and it starts at the beginning. You got to document what the needs are. You have to meet with the staff. You have to figure out what their needs are. You have to figure out what your budget is. So you work with your finance department, figure out what your budget is. And then you try to make, you know, the people with the needs happy, and also make the guys with the money happy, and put that all together into a plan that is, you know, a facility worthy of a large market. And so Luckily, there wasn't a whole lot of drama other than, you know, the move itself, everyone being excited about the new facility. But, you know, this is not me. I mean, I was up there a lot, but I didn't build this. I may have done the design. I may have put it on paper. I may have, you know, determined what wires go where. But it's a team effort. Even the guys that you're consulting with, when you're consulting with air staff and the programming department, you know, it's a team effort. You have to collaborate. You have to listen, and you have to try to figure out how best to, you know, give them what they need to do their job. Because ultimately, that's the product. That's the product that pays your salary, and you want to make sure it's the best it can be. So once you have that plan, then you have to figure out how to get it all on paper, solve that need. Then you have to figure out how to execute. And all these steps along the way, it's documentation, documentation, document. I have gigabytes of documentation. I have 100 meg Excel files. One of the Excel files I have is I basically have every source and every destination and every wire in the entire plant documented, because it helped during construction to know what went where, what device cross-connected to what patch panel to what device. But the other thing is you can use that Excel file, and I happen to have some Brady labels that go in a laser printer. So with Excel, you can export all that. And we had all of our wire labels ready to go. So while we had our little P-touches there and making labels on the fly, we only had to make the ones that were outliers, or maybe the label got messed up when we were trying to put it on the wire. So every wire is documented as far as what it is, what its source is, what its destination, what it's for. And that was done during the build. And it's documented in English. I know a lot of guys use, you know, wire one, wire 156, and then you have to go to a three-ring binder. That
right,
just takes time.
Right.
It just takes time when you're troubleshooting. Yeah. And I'm a big believer of keeping it simple, keeping it easy, and making it go fast. So our guys put the label on, and it said, you know, Studio 645, CD player 1 to X-Node 31-2, input 4. And, you know, all they had to do was put the sticker on and verify it on their build document for the studio and plug it in. And it takes a lot of time. You're building it on paper, because when you're there in the thick of it, because this was being done while contractors were putting up walls and air conditioning systems and pulling conduit. You do it on paper during that time. You're basically building the facility on paper. It helps you figure out what you forgot, what you need. Oh, well, how's this going to connect to this? This has a quarter XLR, and you know, this has a quarter inch, and this has an output of an XLR. How am I going to deal with that? And so if you could build it all on paper, then you kind of can root out about 80% of those issues that just suck the time out of a build, and everybody can start plowing through. And we were plowing through studios at a rate of about one guy could do an entire studio every 1 to 2 days. We did teams of two, and they were assigned two studios, and they could get them done in about 2 to 3 days. And so the bulk of the work was back at the keyboard, configuring the systems, making sure that they all work. And luckily, we documented all that. We knew every IP address of every component that needed to be there, so they had that documentation in front of them. So when they were typing it in, they knew exactly what it should be. Keeps it flowing.
I'm curious, in a facility that being said, 22 studios, you got a lot of gear there. You know, the stations that I've built are a little small, and Class C network is plenty. What, 250 some, you know, IP addresses? I'm guessing your AOIP network was bigger than that.
Oh, yeah. We just used a Class B. It was bigger. The number of channels was high, in the order of around 3,000. But the number of actual devices,
3,000 channels?
Well, when you figure a console, a mixer, every bus output has a channel, can be routed somewhere. So you have four program buses. You got the headphone out. You got this out, that out. The preview, the virtual mixers. It adds up fast. And then you throw in audio drivers on automation systems, each with 4 to 8 outputs. It starts to add up very quickly.
Gotcha. Wow. Hey, well, could we take a look at this this video when you're one of your big talent came in and saw the studios for the first time?
Yeah, I'll
you want to see this?
Yeah. Let me set this up. So we finished the project and everybody moved in, and this particular talent had refused to look at photos or hear about anything of the studios. And whereas everybody else all wanted to know, this guy's like, I don't want to know. I just want to be surprised. And so here it is.
All right, let's take a look at this video. Man Cow coming in the studios.
Okay, Man Cow's about to walk in. He hasn't seen his new studios yet. This will be the first. There he is.
All right. Very important we have a sombrero. So after I've been lost in Lower Wacker for about a half hour because the GPS doesn't work up here. Did you have that happen to you?
Oh, yeah.
So I got sent.
I hate Lower Wacker.
I got sent in Lower Wacker. There's bums pissing everywhere. Chicago. So I should have been here about a half hour ago.
Here's your new Man Cow lounge where you could just hang out right here.
This is our new lounge, green room.
We have a green room also.
Oh, this is.
This is your lounge.
That's my lounge. Come just on in. Let's see my lounge.
It's not really set up yet, just the couch and everything. But
oh, look. The American Badass sign.
Yep.
Okay, so the fact that Cumulus Media, watch yourself.
You want to see what's going to be a huge problem real quick?
Yeah.
Al Roker Jr. sits in this little cubicle now.
That's not big enough for him.
No.
That's not big enough. So the fact that Cumulus Media, now think about this. It's 2016, and they just built the greatest radio studio.
Millions and millions of dollars.
I believe in me. I think they invested well, but... It's 2016, and they built the most magnificent radio studios.
Yeah, you haven't seen anything yet.
No, we're going.
These are just the offices.
Now, for 2 years, year and a half, they've wanted to show me pictures. I said, no, make it great. And everybody says, including Jonathan Brandmeier, who I don't like, and who doesn't talk to me, but he told me on the elevator, I've never been here before, told me, I came here, 50 times to do Springer. I did Jenny Jones. In this building, Steve Harvey. I've hung out with Steve Harvey here, but anyway, even Brandmeier, who sucks, said it's the greatest studio that he's ever seen. So, and he's been around 30 years longer than me. Okay, what is this area?
This is like some, I don't know what this
okay,
is.
Okay, so a waiting room. Yeah. Okay. Okay, all right.
Here's some offices and all stuff. Right. This is where all the nerds hang out.
Oh, that's the engineer stuff. Oh, look
here's,
at all that.
Oh, here's all the... Now, this is like the radio, what no, runs the no, radio
no,
station.
No, and by the way, see all that stuff? See all that stuff? I don't believe any of it. I think all of it can be done with this. I don't believe any of this. Why do you need all this in 2016?
Like all those?
Who's up right now to watch this stupid video?
There's a lot of people watching, so.
Okay, all right. So here we go. Anyway, look, I mean, it goes way back.
So they need all this to run radio stations in 2016. All this stuff. Look at all this. Wires. I don't even know what all this stuff is.
This is like something out of a Harrison Ford movie, and we've got to come in here and get some secret information. Why do you need all this? You don't. There's no way there's no way you need all this equipment in 2016.
All right, okay, now.
All right.
These are state-of-the-art, beautiful studios. We're about to get to Man Cow.
Whoa.
Oh, thank you. That's very nice of you.
Yeah.
I almost fell.
Okay.
All right, here we go.
So, is this the studio?
No. Do you want to see the Loop studio first and then your own personal studio?
Oh, I have my own studio?
You have your own studio. The Loop has a studio, and then your studio is
Let's see the Loop studio. I probably should be in working.
Let's see.
I probably should be in here working.
So, here's the Loop studio, which we won't be in. The Loop Radio, brand new Loop Studios.
And by the way, this right here would be great for me. This would be great.
Then wait till you see your studio.
Look at this. Wow. Now, I guys, this is the first time I've been in here. Who's that guy? Oh, it's an engineer.
Yeah.
Okay. Beautiful view. Look at this.
You want to go bowling?
Well, you can't. Right there. You know, we're right by the movie theaters and all that. Well, this is great.
Wait till you see your studio.
Okay, I'm ready.
Better.
I'm ready.
Better.
Whose studio is that?
That's just the Loop Update studio that I'll probably be working in.
So that's like a little production room.
That's correct.
Okay, all right.
Now, here we go. The Man Cow Studio, the greatest studio I've ever seen in my life.
Okay.
Here we go.
Are you hamming it up a little bit?
No.
Wow.
He just looked in the door. Ready?
Wow.
Here we go. And then
wow.
I just want to see.
Wow. The picture, Sammy Hagar made it.
Here we go.
Look at this.
All right, here we go. This is the new Man Cow Studio.
Spectacular. Duck down, love cheese. Oh, he already is.
Pretty sweet, huh?
Wow. Wow, this is really... So what is all
this
stuff?
Those light up, too.
Well, I want them lit up. How do we light them up?
They're messed up right now, but they're going to fix it.
Oh, they're messed up. Okay.
Way to bring it up.
There's some... But they're awesome.
But what's all this?
This is the Love Cheese production room.
That's Love Cheese and...
And then the phone boy will be in there.
So all our phones and silly stuff, everything's going to be made in there. We're going to have to put curtains over this. I'm letting you look in there.
We're set up to have, 10 guests in here?
So there's a lava lamp. TVs.
We're set up. We have cameras in here.
You can live stream the whole show.
Oh, we got it.
We have professional lighting. Cheese, you want to show the lighting?
We gotta go.
Check out these.
We should be live on the internet all the time.
Ready for this?
Yep.
Let's make it warm in here.
Oh.
Let's go completely all bright.
Is that it? Is that the show? Michael, is that what you were expecting?
That video is publicly available on the website for The Loop, and it's a testament to all the hard work that all the engineers involved, because we brought in engineers from all over the country to work on this project to get it done. And you know, when I see it, it just makes me think, you know, I wish every engineer in the company could see that when you plan stuff and when you work hard and you come together as a team, and when talent has a reaction like that, mm-hmm. you know, when normally they're, you know, engineering, you know, but when they have a reaction like that, you know, you've done a good job, and it just, you know, it makes me happy. And I think everybody involved in that project should be happy about that.
You know, one of the things about engineering for a big company, I'm sure Chris Tobin came across this as well. You know, there's things that you want in every market, every engineer. Well, we need this, we need that, and got to remind ourselves. And it's same for my job too. In my stations, you can't boil the ocean. You gotta boil what you can at the time. And so, I've seen your company, you know, put significant resources into studios here and there, and it's amazing when they do. It just comes out beautiful. And by the way, I know I saw a video with the legs of the studio tables with Man Cow's face lit up. So must have been another video I saw.
Yeah, that particular day he went in, I guess they had some issues where they were getting into the headphone feeds, which were analog, feeding the headphone amps, and just punching down the shields for the LEDs, which are fed by a pulse width modulation. Just punching down the shields solved that problem, and that was solved that next week. But yeah, they
there
do look awesome there when they're lit, and you know, laser cutting the legs. I stole that idea from my friend Mark LaMuth here in Atlanta, who works for another company. I stole that idea from him, and so I can't take credit for that idea.
Well, that's how we grow. We share ideas and learn and put them together where they can go. Hey, you are watching or listening to This Week in Radio Tech, episode 319. Michael Gay is our guest. Chris Tobin is along. He's getting ready for the CCBE. Convention in Canada, and he is outside Toronto, Canada, there at a resort. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, a couple final words. Michael, I'm sorry to surprise you with this, but maybe you have a tip for us. Chris will have one. I've got a wonderful message that one of our wonderful listeners have sent us, and I'm glad to read that, and then hopefully, Michael, you'll have a tip as well, something to leave our listeners with. Our show is brought to you in part by the folks at Lavo. Everywhere you go, you know, you find touchscreens, and that's where, your smartphone and your tablet, of course. Supermarket checkouts have touchscreens. Laptops come with them, and so do radios and new cars. Even airplane cockpits have touch. I wish they were had touch screens when I was flying, but they do now. Well, the intuitive controls on touchscreen make your fast tasks faster and with fewer errors. They don't make me talk any better. Isn't it time you brought the power of touchscreens into your radio studio? Well, you can with the Crystal Clear Virtual Radio Console from Lavvo. Crystal Clear gives talent an instantly understandable multi-touch interface. Faders, meters, clocks, timers, talk back, and more, they all live in harmony on a single screen so shows run smoother and sound better. Crystal Clear features Lavvo's exclusive auto mix. This is cool. It's the hands-free smart mixing algorithm that's designed for fast-paced multi-mic talk shows. By the way, it works with music shows, too. And they have auto gain. You just push a button, and the preamp calibrates automatically while your guest is speaking in the mic. And with so much advanced automation, talent can dock the mixing controls. Yeah, push those to the side and do other things like work with your delivery system, your audio editor, or telephone controls. Crystal Clear's power plant is just one rack unit. That's pretty amazing when you consider how much DSP is on board. Compression, EQ, voice processing, precision delay, they can all be applied to all of your mic, line, and digital sources. Now, there are optional upgrades, including redundant power, MADI, Ravenna, AES-67, and all of this power costs no more than you'd spend for an ordinary console. So if you're thinking about a new console, don't decide before you check out Crystal Clear from Lavvo. You can go to the website. It's www.lavvo.com, pronounced Lavvo. You can read about it there, or if you're in the U.S., call Bill Bennett at Lavvo USA, Bill's number, and he's sitting by the phone waiting for you at 888-810-4468. That's 810-4468 to find out more. The future is clear. It's Lavvo Crystal Clear. All right, time for the part of our show where we tease you with good stuff. And I got this email during the show, earlier in the show, got an email, very nice one, from a fellow by the name of David Uel. David Uel. And he writes, "Thought I'd take a minute to drop you a note on how much I enjoy your show. Even though I am now retired, I still keep up with what's new in the business and find this is a good resource. I wish this sort of resource would have been available when I first got into radio engineering." So David Uel, thank you very much. Very kind words. And you can leave us email by going to our website, thisweekinradiotech.com. And there's a contact us area there and send us an email that way and we'll get it. And we appreciate everyone that we get. All right. Chris Tobin, have you got, I know you've had a harried day today. You got something to leave us with?
You know, I was doing some work the other day at a transmitter site and came across talking with some folks. I may have said this a couple of episodes back, but just a reminder. A list on the door of your transmitter site for contact info. And the other thing I came across was I was working on a couple of switches, Ethernet switches, and the connections on the back, the RJ45s, didn't have any labels. Yeah. So I know in the world of IT, it's a very different discipline than what we experience in broadcast engineering, but it does make sense to do two things. Label the cable and make a note in a book or whatever you want to call it, somewhere, of what each port is doing, where it's connected. So if you had to go into the switch remotely and turn off the port because maybe a problem, like, say, a broadcast packet chaos from a device, rather than, go crazy pulling plugs out, you can go to that port and turn it off because that's exporter, Nautel exporter 1 or transmitter 2 or maybe audio processor 6. And that's one of the things I did. I was labeling connectors so we could at least do that. And also you can walk through your assistant or somebody covering for you. If they have a problem, they can look and say, oh, yeah, okay, I see where that Ethernet cable goes. So just label the cable.
When you're in a hurry and pulling your hair out trying to solve a problem, contact information on the transmitter door. I mean, on the inside, I guess you're to be of the inside of the door where you have all the numbers for people you might need to call, the power company,
well, yes.
The plumber.
Yeah, you do inside the door. So when the door is open, you can still make the call. Also on the inside wall next to the phone. Always put these numbers next to the telephone. Don't put them in the binder at the workbench on the other side of the transmitter row and the phone is elsewhere. Yeah. Put it by the phone in a little plastic holder. Tape it to the wall, secure it however you'd like. So you pick up the handset. One hand is free. You could look up, call, do what you have to do, and then write down the notes that you have to take care of. So that's the trick.
We did that when we were kids. When I was a kid, every home we lived in, by the wall phone, there was, some company provided, an advertising thing, but, a hanger by the phone. That's the local police, the local fire, the local hospital, whatever. They were all up. Of course, nowadays it's 911 for all those things, but you need more numbers than the transmitters have. Good advice, and good advice to label your ports as to what they do. And also, I would add to that, if you're dealing with managed switches, and more we are, learn how to get into the managed switch. Learn that even if you're not using it for AOIP, if you're just using it for business purposes, learn, you know, give it an IP address, learn how to get into it, and you know what the password is, so that you can analyze a flood storm that way too, a packet storm. You can see which ports are really, really busy, and you can turn them off that way too. So good advice, Chris. Thanks very much. Michael Gay, put you on the spot here. Do you have any piece of advice to leave our listeners with?
Well, when he talks about labeling cables, that kind of goes back to what I said earlier. And if you document everything in Excel, then you can use these sheets and you can make a lot of cables quickly rather than making them one at a time. Plus, you also have, you know, an Excel spreadsheet that if you're not right in place, you can look it up. And to take that one step further, something I stole from my friend Brian Wilson at Westwood One, every T1 codec, he put a label on the front with the circuit ID, the telephone company, and the emergency number for that particular telephone company. So for those of us who have point-to-point T1s for our STLs or even our ISDN codecs, if it's down, you've got all the information there if you need to submit a trouble ticket. It's right in front of you, not in a binder somewhere.
Yeah. And if you're doing even point-to-point IP or an MPLS type of thing, put that contact information about the account and such there, because you know more and more we're switching from point-to-point T1 type circuits to other IP type of circuits that need contact information.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. Good like deal. The IP address. If you have an MPLS network, put the IP address on the codec so that you know when you're trying to troubleshoot them, you know that way. You know, because you're going to be there with a laptop probably sitting on the floor somewhere plugged into the switch. And, you know, you don't want to have to look up a file to find that IP address. If it's right there in front of you, you know what to get to.
Michael, there's so much that was on our roster here that we didn't get to. And I appreciate so much the information that you gave us. I'd like to have you back on again sometime. And we can talk about your company, Not a Bot Yet. And I'm going to put a link to it anyway in the show notes. Michael Gay and his wife, Teresa, run a little company where they make some products that make our lives easier as engineers. So you're going to be interested in that. There's a quick view of it right there, but we'll put that in the show notes. All right, Chris Tobin, have a great convention there at CCBE. Give my friends there all my love and appreciation, and especially Stu Buck. Shake his hand for me, okay?
Absolutely, absolutely. No, this is going to be fun. Like I say, if those who watch here in the North Country and you're in the area, come on by, you know, the routine. And those who are not, sorry, you're missing out some good fun this weekend.
Yeah.
That's all I can say.
All right. And Michael Gay, thank you so much for taking your time to be with us today. I really appreciate hearing your wisdom and advice. Thanks again.
Oh, yeah, Michael, when you...
I'm not sure how much wisdom there was, but thanks for having me anyway.
Well, you're humble,
too. No, plenty of wisdom. Don't worry about it. And next time, Michael, you talk to Brian Wilson, tell him I said hi.
I will do that.
Our show this week in... Oh, yeah, Chris used to work with him, yeah. Hey, our show 319, This Week in Radio Tech, brought to you by the folks at Lavo and the folks at the TELUS Alliance with Direct Current. You need to subscribe to that. And also the folks at Axia with LiveWire Plus, which includes AES-67. Our producer really helped us out today. Thanks for working through our troubles. And that is Suncast at the GFQ Network. And also Andrew Zarian, the founder of the GFQ Network. Thanks for letting us be on this incredible network with lots of cool shows. Check them all out at gfqnetwork.com. I'm Kirk Harnack. Tell your friends about This Week in Radio Tech, and maybe they'll still like you. We'll see you next week on This Week in Radio Tech. Bye-bye, everybody.